This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
John Crispin calls games for ESPN, Westwood One. He was a very good college basketball player at Penn State and UCLA. His brother was a really good college basketball player. The last time we had John on the show, we talked about his grandfather, who I'm pretty sure still holds the Maryland State High School scoring record. He scored 79 in a game. John scored 62 in a game, and I'm scrolling down your Twitter account, at John Crispin ESPN on X on Twitter, and you've got a nephew, Joe's son, that put in 41 in a game in December. Man, what a South Jersey basketball family you guys are. How many of the youngins are out there that are just as good as you, your brother, and your grandfather?
Well, naturally, we still have egos, so none of them are that good. We realize when we look back and you kind of lay it all out there like that, all the scoring and everything in the family, we just sound like a bunch of ball hog gunners. Like, I don't know how anyone played with us based on some of these numbers, but, we won games, a couple state championships in high school. My grandfather played in the Final Fours. Nephew Elijah's done very well, just got his 2,000th point this year, which is cool. I think between the three of us, there's like, close to 7,000 points scored between my brother, myself, and his son. So, yeah, I'm in all truth, though, I just hope, I got a 4-, 3-, and 1-year-old. I just hope they want to play golf. That's kind of where
exactly.
I'm at, because I think of being a father in the world of college basketball today, and it sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like torture. I can't imagine. Or I just hope they're not good enough to think that they're worth money, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to be good enough to enjoy the game, but not good enough to no longer enjoy the game, right? Well, the middle ground is where I'd like them to fall. That'd be great.
Well, they're really young, but I bet you with the 4-year-old, you can tell if he's got a handle at this point.
Yeah, he's got a shot. He's got a shot.
He's got a shot, too.
I'm also a tremendous manipulator, and he's got a great left-handed golf swing. So I've geared him towards that. We're looking at simulators because kids like video games, and what better way to get your kid into golf than stick him in front of a simulator and play Angry Birds or Top Golf like that? I'm into a little bit of that, but we're always outside shooting. He's a lefty, so he's naturally got a nice stroke. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it looks prettier, doesn't it?
But it is. It's pretty. His baseball swing, I'm coaching T-ball this offseason. His baseball swing is pure. Golf swing pure. Lefty jump shot. We got to train some toughness.
Are you and your brother good golfers?
I am, but that's because I didn't have kids until I was 39.
Right.
Right. Joe had children when he was a professional, playing all over the world at 24 years old. He started having kids. He's got 5 kids. So he doesn't have the luxury of golf. I used to play 4 a week. Right. So I got myself to a 0.5, and now I hover around a 2-3, which is just, you know, just to keep my sanity type of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he likes to remind me every year we play at a Crispin Open because we take ourselves and our sports careers way too seriously. We play at a Crispin Open down in the Jersey, down at the Jersey Shore. And he likes to remind me that he only plays once a year and he's not that far behind me every year. I mean, we're 45 and 44 years old and we still do that to this day.
You know, in talking about, you know, your young kids, you know, learning a golf swing at a young age, we all understand the importance of that, mm-hmm. you know, the difference between what a golf swing looks like when they were taught one at a young age versus if you started to play in your 20s or 30s, yep. It's different. But don't you think, John, I've always felt this, that if you can play basketball, you know, especially you can handle a basketball that you and play basketball, you can do almost anything else well.
Yes.
That's the sport, because of the coordination required, that really is a tell as to whether or not you can do other things.
So I would say it's two things. It's coordination and fluidity of movement.
Yep.
Like that's the next part of it, is like the coordination, the eye hand stuff, the foot coordination, all that. Like, that's all good, but there's a certain fluidity of the movement in basketball that could be applied everywhere. It could be applied in throwing a football. It could be applied in swinging a golf club or a baseball bat. We tend to be good wiffle ball players as basketball players. But the coordination in terms of eyesight, just seeing things, getting a feel for things. Well, part of that is because basketball's fluid. And I'm almost concerned that we lose some of that fluidity at times, particularly in the NCAA tournament, where it gets kind of choppy. Like, we lose some of that beautiful basketball is jazz fluidity. And I do. I agree with you. I think basketball players at a high level could be really good at it. Look at Steph Curry on the golf course.
Yeah, exactly.
J.R. Smith on the golf course. These guys are smooth. Like, my body's too broken to be perfectly smooth on the golf course. But, you know, I manipulate a good swing with whatever I've got left.
Right. No, you see it. College basketball players have become great NFL players than college football
yes.
players have become great NBA players. You know, we've seen
that.
Yeah,
Neanderthals don't really make it in the NBA. I'm sorry, but there's
yeah.
the other part of that is the cultural part of football versus basketball versus other sports. Like,
yeah.
you hear my little guy in the background here find a ball. He just goes nuts. but the cultural side of the different sports, like the young elite players, right? They all participate in a different culture in their sport, right? It's really
true.
You've almost specialized in sports, and the cultures are so different, right? The culture in baseball is totally different than the culture in basketball, and so on and so on. Football, in particular, it's a different culture. So I think that's a tough one too. But basketball, you can fit anywhere. The culture of basketball also has the same fluidity that the game of basketball has, which is really interesting, too.
All right, let's talk tournament. John's going to be on the call for Westwood One on games Friday in Cleveland, and we can talk about a couple of those teams here in a moment. But big picture, who do you like? I mean, there are, and I just had somebody on from Vegas, the top four seeds in this tournament, the four number ones, there is massive difference between the odds those teams have to win it all, Duke, Florida, Houston, and Auburn, and, you know, the two seeds, a much bigger delta, you know, odds-wise between ones and everybody else than you typically see. Do you see it that way? Do you see it being very top-heavy?
It feels that way. And I think, you know, I can't say I see it that way, because when you really start to analyze everything, you realize there's just too much that we don't know, because there's too much you can't control. And that's what the tournament's really all about. I mean, you look at this Auburn team, and I think they've been the best all year. I think they've been tested mightily in the SEC, but they've been the best all year. I think they're also the most adaptable in the sense that they could grind out some tough games, or they can win in a playmaker's game that's 95-90. You know, Auburn's kind of got that, but then you look at Louisville and you go, wait, Louisville's a really good, experienced group. Like, they're older dudes. They understand how to play. They're playing with house money. Like, that's a dangerous team. So who's to say Auburn doesn't get knocked off early? Like, the more you analyze it, the more you can pick apart and find upsets. But when you just step back and you look at the teams and you go, okay, give me Duke, Houston, Florida, and Auburn. Are they the best teams in the country? I have a tough time saying that they're not hands down the best four teams in the country. I mean, the fact that St. John's is a two, I think they're very good, but they're a scrappy bunch. It's like the old Rick Pitino Louisville team that won a national championship, like hack and foul on every play. And this is not a knock on them, but that's just kind of what they do. They ramp up that pressure to be able to make you uncomfortable. They just don't have the firepower that those top four have. So I do, it feels as if you step back, those four teams are better than everybody else. And the biggest concern for Houston is whether they're capable of scoring when they need to.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was going to ask you, of those four, do you have a favorite?
I think it's got to be Duke. And here's why. Like, I kind of had this thought in the ACC tournament. I did the ACC tournament up until I did the quarterfinals. And when I was watching I guess it was the end of the Carolina game where Carolina came back in the second half, and then the championship game, I felt like we and John Shire learned more about that Duke team without Cooper Flagg while they had to fight through it. I think we learned a lot about them without Malik Brown, without Cooper Flagg, best player in the country, hands down. You learned a lot about that group and their ability to absolutely guard you, guard the ball, defend the rim. They did everything right without their best player and best defensive player. Told me a ton about that group. So if you get Cooper Flagg back and you get that balance, regardless of whether you have Malik Brown back or not, they've shown that they're capable of winning different styles too. They can grind it out if they need to. If they need to defend, they'll defend. They'll make it a physical contest because they've got length and bodies. But at the same time, if it's a playmakers game, they can win that too. Like that was probably the most impressive thing about Duke. So I like Duke above anybody else, but I can promise you that means absolutely nothing when it comes to who is going to actually win.
Right, of course. We all understand the nature of one and done, you know, on neutral, you know, court environments. It's crazy this time of year. We are talking to John Crispin, at John Crispin ESPN on X on Twitter. He will be calling four games in Cleveland on Friday for Westwood One. So after the ones, you know, let's take it, you know, from two seeds, you know, backwards. Who do you have a feel for a team that could make at least a run to the Final Four?
Those are always the best questions because I feel like I can look at some teams and say, look, I like Michigan State because not because they're that much more capable than anybody else, but they understand who they are and they know what they're not. I think those teams become really dangerous in the NCAA tournament, so I do like a Michigan State. I think they understand what they can do. I also think Missouri is a really dangerous team. Like, you just watch how they play. They don't give a rip about what's working or not working. Their foot is always on the gas. Those teams, to me, are the most dangerous because ultimately what they do is they make you play the way they want to play. Right? Gonzaga used to do that when they were kind of in the height of their, you know, their ascension, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
they would play in a way that was like, go ahead and play our way and go ahead and beat us at what we do best, right? Be better than us at what we do best. And sometimes they would lose, and that's okay. But where they really got hurt was when they played St. Mary's and the game would get slowed down. So Missouri is the type of team that says, we're not going to let you slow the game down. We're going to play so freely with a neon green light at all times, regardless of the situation, that the game has to be fast and you're going to have to outscore us. I think those teams are incredibly dangerous on a short prep. I think those teams are incredibly dangerous if you haven't really faced that and if you need to control a game to be able to win it. So I look at certain teams like that, and that also brings you to Alabama, who I'm going to have in Cleveland. Alabama right. doesn't give a rip. They're going to let it fly. They can shoot 35, 43s on any night and not care whether they make 20% or 40%. I think that makes them a really dangerous team, but they've also shown the ability to kind of grind things out this year, where you keep the pace high, but you're willing to actually fight a little bit physically. So I think teams that are willing to score are dangerous. That's also why you got to consider Wisconsin, which sounds crazy that Wisconsin is a scoring program, right?
Yeah, like, they are.
Tanjay is unbelievable. They're kicked off the training wheels. And here's the funny thing. Could you imagine this group with Chucky Hepburn? Chucky Hepburn, who's now at Louisville.
Louisville.
Chucky Hepburn was waiting for the opportunity to kick the training wheels off and just play loose basketball. And he's doing it at Louisville, and he's one of the best in the country. But if you put Chucky Hepburn on that group, Wisconsin's one of the top five teams in the country.
Hey, Tanjay, by the way, he's so good. He's clearly a pro, and he was just out of gas on Sunday. Yes. 1 for 15, I think he was, in that Big Ten final. Do you have any thoughts on Maryland?
I really like Maryland. My biggest concern is just the youth and then some of these guys who are new to one another. Like, they have found something, and I think, they were good in the non-conference. You could see the potential, but they really found themselves in Big Ten play to the point where they understood kind of way they have to play. And they're going to be free around the perimeter. They're going to trust their guys down low. They figured out how to use Reese and Queen together. They have great guard play. But I just feel like the inexperience at this level could be an issue. That's my only concern, mainly because they're such a rhythm and flow team. I mean, they're grinders, but at the same time, when you watch them at their best, they are a fast-paced rhythm and flow team. So if you can't create that in the NCAA tournaments against unfamiliar opponents, I think it's a challenge for some of the young guys like a Derek Queen, who you really have to rely on down low. Also, short prep. It's a different season. I don't know how to explain it. It is a completely different season when you're going and playing for the rest of your season, right? Like, it's a new world. So I'm interested to see how they respond. I love the group. I don't really trust their depth, but their top six could compete with anybody in the country.
You know, you mentioned short prep a couple of times. Is there a team in the field that is like what they used to say about Boeheim and Syracuse? Man, if you get them on Saturday after playing on Thursday and you've only got 2 days to prep for that 2-3 zone, it's a problem. Is there a team like that in the field?
You know, I think Alabama is like that. BYU could be like that because they're old. Like, you can prep for them all you want, but they've got experienced dudes, and they just know counters that you don't know exist. So a lot of times those guys are tough. Maybe a Clemson, because you don't really understand how good their defense is until you play against it, which means you got to start playing the game, and then you have to adjust within the game. No one really plays this help side perfection the way Clemson does. And they do it because they've got guys that have been playing together forever.
Don't you think he's an underrated coach, Brad Brownell?
Absolutely is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We undervalue the coaches that can win with less. And that bothers the heck out of me. We celebrate the guys who can assemble the greatest talent as if they're the greatest basketball masterminds in the world. And I'm not trying to knock anybody, but let's just talk honestly here. Like, we celebrate the guys that are able to assemble talent, yet we don't celebrate the guys that have shown the ability to win with less at the highest level. I celebrate David more than Goliath, right? Be David. Be cool about being David and go take down the big boys with the high dollar, you know, the payrolls and all that stuff, because ultimately the best teams win, right? Watch out for Yale. These dudes just know how to play and they don't give a rip what you're making, right? Like, there's going to be a lot of that this year. It wouldn't surprise me to see some upsets. I mean, we've seen the downfall of Kansas. They've got one of the highest payrolls in the country, and we've seen nothing but the downfall. And then you look at Kansas State, same thing. High payroll, terrible performance. Like, there's going to be some teams that are winning with less, that don't give a rip about you and how much you're making. They want it more than you do. And I hate that I just used a cliche, but it actually makes sense here. It's like this, right? Why did Rocky lose in Rocky III? And it wasn't because Mick died. It's because he started to celebrate his celebrity. He started to train in front of people so people saw him. He lost his edge. How did he beat Clubber Lang the second time around? He got his edge back, man. Eye of the Tiger. He trained in a bad situation. Like, he got tough again. So I think there are a lot of teams out here who lost their edge but are really talented, and they may have a small number next to their name. And then there's a lot of other teams in that 7 through 10 spot where you go, those dudes have an edge, and they got something to prove, and they've been able to win with less. That's dangerous.
You know, I totally agree with you, and I've had this conversation, you know, either on the air or with other people. I so much prefer the guys that may not have the Sweet 16s and the Final Fours and the national championships. Yep. It is often about Joes, more than X's and O's. But I love guys like Brownell and, you know, to me, even Kelvin Sampson throughout his career.
Absolutely.
He just wins everywhere he goes, and he never has the top tier, you know, talent. Matt Painter's always been one of my favorites, you know, to watch. Who else fits into that category for you?
I think Greg Gard does. I think we undervalue him because then people
totally
go,
agree.
People go, oh, well, they're different now. They're different now. He's had to
adapt. Changed.
It's how you play is your best recruiter. I mean, that's the problem. You have to play a certain way because that's how you recruit and get the best players. Now, they haven't abandoned their structure and their kind of, we'll call it, their responsibilities. They haven't abandoned that. They're just less rigid about it, right? It used to be almost structured with rigidity, and that's how they control games and won. Well, when they get the right talent, look, what was it, 2013 and 14?
Right.
They go to two straight Final Fours. Well, it's because they had the talent, but they didn't abandon their structure. They still played the same base defense. They still didn't, quote, beat themselves, right? They still didn't foul and put themselves in a bad situation by picking up fouls, right? Except for the second half of the Duke game, but we'll leave that out in the championship. But it's one of those things where we don't appreciate that enough, right? We don't appreciate the guy that is willing to adapt a little bit while not abandoning who you are, right? I believe personally, right, have an empathetic perspective, understand what you're all about, adapt to others without sacrificing what is true to you and what is true to your core. Like, that is one of the hardest things to do in the world today, and Greg Barnes has done it. So I think we really should celebrate that and honor that. I also think Kelvin Sampson, you're right, is one of those guys that everybody likes to dump on him for a bunch of text messages. Are you freaking kidding me?
Can you imagine?
We serious anymore?
I mean, you know where we are today.
Yeah. Do you know what's going on out there? The over-the-table business that's now allowed to be done, the under-the-table business that's still happening, but we just choose not to talk about it. And we're upset that Kelvin Sampson text messaged some dudes. Like, come on, man. The guy has done a terrific job. He has made basketball incredibly re-relevant again in Houston. And they're one of the funnest, most painful watches in the country,
probably in the history of basketball. So well put. Like, it is fun to see teams just go out and physically try to beat the snot out of you. And then at times offensively, it is painful to watch. Like you said, it's whether or not they can score enough, you know, over a six-game stretch. All right. I love the conversation, and we've had John on before. He's great. So have you picked out a couple of first-round upsets? I mean, you mentioned Yale. You mentioned a couple of teams. Are there a couple of upsets that you absolutely are feeling good about?
I don't even know how to define upset anymore, though, right? Like, you look at this, and you know, could I say that Drake could beat Missouri? Yeah, because Missouri could just not make shots, and they'll keep shooting.
Right, but so let's just go with this seeding. As long as there's only one lower-seeded team in the first round that's actually favored, that's unusual. Colorado State is a short favorite over Memphis. Every other higher-seeded team is favored. So let's just take the 10 line and lower. If you want to go 11 line and lower, whatever you would deem to be, you know, what the casual fan would say, wow, I didn't see that coming.
I would say Liberty and Oregon. Oregon's got good length, and they've got inside-out play, but Liberty just looks to score. And those teams can play freely because of their seed line, right? Everybody knows a 5-12 can be an upset, but, you know, you carry a little confidence into it, but ultimately you play freely when you're at 12. When you're a 5, you're trying not to lose. That's the biggest issue in the NCAA tournament that we don't talk about. One team is trying not to lose, the other team's trying to win. That's what makes these upsets happen. One team comes out and plays confidently, and Liberty is that type of team that they're going to look to score. So I think that makes them dangerous. They're going to space the floor. I would also watch out for Yale. I like Texas A&M a ton. Love Texas A&M. But I watched Yale in that championship game and was really impressed with just their general control of the game. You know, that another team can go on runs. They stick with it. They just fight back. They're very polished and poised. Helped that they were playing in their home gym. But I just think that's a team where you go, you underestimate them because they're the Ivy League, but you also don't realize the strength that is a team that's stuck together. Like, you have no idea how far more advanced they are because they know each other. Whereas everybody else is, you know, it's like a couple of mercenaries with a couple guys that have been around for a while with a coach that has great cool sayings and is a great dude to be around. But at the same time, do they know each other? Have they been through a tournament situation together? Probably not. So I think there's some upsets out there. I would look at Yale, and I would definitely look at Liberty. They just jump out.
You know, the way you described it, by the way, and I think if anybody's really paying attention, like, when you see these neutral court, sterile environments, middle of the afternoon at times, and you see teams, like you said, that are just playing freely and they are confident, and the higher seeded team expected to win, you can see teams tighten up in that environment. As, by the way, college basketball, it's a very short game. You know, it's 40 minutes. Yes. There are ways to shorten the game if you don't have the most talent. But I think we see that every year. A lot of times the upsets happen because of what you just said. You know, teams are just going out there saying, nobody's expecting it, we're playing our game, and then the other team really starts to feel it and they tighten up.
I have a key to the game that I can't ever say on air, but it's avoid TBS. TBS is tight B-hole syndrome.
Yeah, right.
It happens. It happens at the free throw line when you need to make a pressure shot, but it also happens in a game where you realize quickly in that contest that you don't have control over this team that you're supposed to beat. And
right.
That's where the experience matters. And it's not just, and this is what I've been saying this all year, it's not just experience in terms of, oh, you got five seniors. Yeah, those five seniors didn't know each other until 3, 4, 5 months ago. And they just figured out how to play together about a month ago. So how are they going to do in an NCAA tournament setting where all of your basketball careers at the collegiate level are done? And truth be told, you're all not going to make as much money as pros as you did as college guys. So what does that sense of urgency do to you? Does it move you in the right direction or does it take you in the wrong direction? Does it make you selfless or does it make you selfish? That's what we're going to learn from a lot of these teams. So I like the teams that can just be free, let it fly, neon green light, play with confidence, and oh, by the way, they know each other and know how to communicate on a basketball floor.
I'm going to guess that a guy that probably got an average of 25 shot attempts up in a game that you never really felt the effects of TBS. But that's just projection from afar. Your games in Cleveland, by the way, John, include one of my favorite coaches, Randy Bennett at St. Mary's.
Oh, yeah.
Out of less consistently.
Yes, and what makes him so good is his ability to manipulate the game. Right.
How
do you take a Gonzaga team that scores 85 points a game and you just suck the life out of the game and make them score 50? Like that is a unique skill. He's able to manipulate and control games, and that makes you dangerous. And look, Tony Bennett did it, and he won a national championship.
Yeah.
Now, Tony Bennett did it, and he also lost to a 16th seed. So there's those things. But I think St. Mary's can score when they need to, but ultimately they defend. They don't guard, they defend. And I think that defense is like a cumulative thing where it wears you down over time, where things that you normally get just aren't there. And that makes him consistently year in, year out, one of the more successful coaches that doesn't get talked about. Yet I would tell you this, he probably has the best life of any coach out there because he understands where he is. It's great. He's got a good life. He doesn't need to chase the rest of the world who's just never happy. I think there's contentment. There's understanding. And I think you got a guy who loves where he's at, and they love him.
This was fun, as always. Really appreciate it. Have a great call. Four games, got prepping for four games in one day, I can only imagine. And then I'm sure you'll have the weekend games as well.
Yep.
Wish you the best, and I thank you for doing this.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Enjoy the tournament.
John Crispin, everybody. You'll hear him if you're listening on the Team 980 this weekend, driving around to games. He's doing the games in Cleveland on Westwood One. We'll have all the coverage of the tournament on the Team 980 throughout. All right, Denton and I think, are going to attempt to start filling out our brackets. We'll do that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the team980.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get to brackets, Bill Barnwell wrote this morning on ESPN.com of some of the free agents that are still out there and what would be like the right fit, what would be the ideal landing spot. And he threw out that Keenan Allen would be a great fit for Washington. Keenan Allen, I mean, longtime receiver, obviously, with the Chargers all of those years. And then last year with Caleb Williams in his rookie year in Chicago, he caught 70 balls, you know, on the season for 744 yards. And we know how much Chicago struggled offensively at times, not just because of Caleb Williams. They had a lot of issues. You know, Keenan Allen... Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, all those years together in L.A., were in San Diego with the Chargers and Phillip Rivers, and those were some good teams. I mean, he caught over 100 balls five times with the Chargers, and the years that he didn't were the years that he missed games, because he did miss some games. Not as many as Mike Williams missed, I think, at the same time. That was always the issue with the Charger wide receivers. It's like they have an elite pairing, Williams and Keenan Allen. But the issue would always be, are they going to be available? Because, you know, every year one of the two got hurt, if not both of them got hurt. But Keenan Allen would be interesting, wouldn't he? Like, he's big. His hands are unbelievable. He is, you know, would certainly reflect, I mean, not the money, because he's still out there and he's going to be looking for the right position for him too, where he can actually compete to win. But he's a big-time veteran, hands-catching, big-target, outside receiver. I could definitely see him fitting in with the group they have. You know, he's the opposite of Debo in terms of the way he'd be used. You know, he's really going to be in that Noah Brown spot with Noah Brown coming back, or maybe that was going to be a Luke McCaffrey spot. You know, I can't imagine it's going to be a lot of money for Keenan Allen at 32 years old. I've always been a fan of Keenan Allen, and I think culturally he'd be a great fit, right? I think one of the things about Allen throughout his career is everybody has loved him. He's been a real adult among, you know, sometimes a lot of young people. I'd do Keenan Allen, would you, for Washington?
I'd love to have him here. If he ends up being what you consider wide receiver two, with Debo being more of like that weapon X kind of a deal, I think that'd be great for the offense. I'm stunned.
He's a perfect wide receiver too.
I'm stunned he hasn't been signed yet.
Why he's still a free agent, Barnwell writes, Allen was one of the many players dragged down by last season's disaster in Chicago, as he failed to live up to expectations after being traded for last March. One season after posting a 1,243-yard campaign, he managed only 744 receiving yards, but seven touchdowns. His 1.5 yards per route run were a career low. Remember, they were throwing a lot of line of scrimmage stuff. So does Washington. Why teams should be interested? He can still get open. Allen's 57 open score ranked 64th in the league, which isn't great given that he ranked first in the same metric in 2023. But 64th is still good enough to qualify for meaningful snaps in any offense that needs somebody to beat man coverage. Now, you know, you will face, and we saw this at times last year, and we'll probably see it more zone coverage, because you don't want to turn your back to number five. He writes, unlike Amari Cooper, who didn't do much in a Bills offense where everyone was producing, Allen was stuck in an offense where everybody appeared to be operating at half speed and nobody played up to their potential. Teams are going to look at Allen's injury history with some reticence. After repeatedly battling injuries early in his career, he strung together a series of healthy seasons between 2017 and 2019. He has failed to play a full season since, missing time with hamstring injuries and heel injuries. He probably pro profiles as a third wideout in a good offense or a second wideout in a subpar one at this point in his career. But I wonder if this past season with the Bears might have depressed his market more than it should have. That's what I would guess, that everybody suffered in Chicago's offense last year. I mean, remember the frustration at times from DJ Moore last year? And I'm still not sure if it was specific to just Caleb Williams or if it was the way the offense was being called, but I think some of it was Caleb Williams. He just wasn't seeing it quickly enough. Coaching, remember, didn't DJ Moore either totally blow up at one point during the season?
He walked off the field during a play.
Yeah. Keenan Allen still, you know, in an offense that was not very good, 70 catches, 744 yards, 7 touchdowns, led the team with 7 touchdowns. He's a target and hands. I mean, physically he's got to be right, but there's something about the way he's played the game for years that I love, and I think it's the right kind of signing for one season, a season in which you're trying to go win the whole thing. What other receivers are out there? Nobody really.
No,
right?
not a lot. The pickings are slim at the moment.
Well, Amari Cooper. What about Stephon Diggs? No, you don't. They would never. I don't think they'd bring Stephon Diggs into this.
I don't think they would. Yeah. I'm good on Amari Cooper, by the way, too. I'm all right.
Boy, that, what happened?
He went from Vegas to Dallas to Cleveland. That put some years on you.
Remember, though, when Cleveland was making that run to the playoffs 2 years ago and Flacco was a quarterback? I mean, he had some monster games. Monster games down the stretch. But, yeah, anyway. All right, we'll start our brackets, I think, next when we come back. I do want to tell you that Window Nation has a great deal going on, and they've got it going on for the rest of the month. So if you've been thinking about new windows, I recommend Window Nation, and I recommend moving quickly with Window Nation, at the very least, just to get an actual estimate. It's free of charge, no risk. You'll benefit from having that quote. You can shop it if you want, but Window Nation right now is offering 2 free windows with every 2 you buy, with no money down, no payments, and no interest for 2 full years. You'll get an estimate in an hour or less. You'll get your windows installed in a day or less, and you won't have to pay anything on those new windows for 2 years until the year 2027. Window Nation sells some of the best windows you can buy, some of the most insulated windows you can buy, at a fraction of the price of the expensive name brands, and they often outlast and outperform the name brands too. They're guaranteed for life, so you really have nothing to lose. If you've been thinking about new windows, call Window Nation and get the free estimate. If you move forward with them, it's going to be the best deal. You're going to be working with a company that is tops in customer service. They've got over 30,000 five-star reviews on Google. 96% of their installs go off without a hitch. They don't require follow-up service. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. Mention my name. They'll come out and take good care of you. All right, on tomorrow's show, we'll do our brackets. We'll be on tomorrow at 10 a.m. for an hour, and then you'll get Westwood One's pregame coverage of round one. And then on Friday, we'll be on for an hour from 10 to 11 as well. There is, you know, some NFL news out there. You know, Denton, we talked about some of the rules proposals earlier. There's another one out there on the tush push. It's Green Bay's proposal. We know that Green Bay, Mark Murphy, the team president, has spoken out against the tush push. And they put it into an actual rule proposal. The rule is called assisting the runner and interlocking interference. No offensive player may, and then there are 3 parts of this rule that I think already exist, but then the last part of it is no offensive player may immediately at the snap push or throw his body against a teammate who was lined up directly behind the snapper and received the snap to aid him in an attempt to gain yardage. If they do that, the proposed rule would be a penalty that would be 10 yards. And what they write is, this would prohibit an offensive player from pushing a teammate who is lined up directly behind the snapper and receives the snap immediately at the snap. And the reason for the rule, player safety and pace of play. You know, I think that the pace of play, you know, I don't know if it actually affects true pace of play, but what it does is it does feel like the game kind of slows down. I guess the pace of play would be the defensive penalties in trying to stop it. That's probably what they're speaking to. But I've talked a lot about the tush push and the reason I'm against it. I can't stand the play personally. I think it looks more like another sport, something like rugby. But it's not just about the fourth down and ones, or even the third down and ones. It's that Philly has used the tush push more than once in consecutive plays in the same series. You know, a third and two tush push to get to a fourth and one tush push. That's just not what you want to watch. First of all, there is some player safety involved. Secondly, we saw with the pace of play in the NFC Championship game with Frankie Louvu doing what was legal. Apparently, if he had done it one more time, we found out that a touchdown could have been awarded, which was absurd. But I want this rule to pass. I don't want to see the tush push anymore. And as I've said many times in the past, I promise you, I swear on my children, this has nothing to do with this being about the Eagles. If it were the Carolina Panthers, if it were the Tennessee Titans, I would want it out. I wonder if it has a chance of passing. I have no idea. Have you read anything in terms of what the expectation is this offseason on tush push?
I know people want it out of here. I have no idea. I mean, this is, what, the second offseason that they've tried to come for it? So I have no idea. I can't imagine the teams want that to keep continuing.
Washington has a proposal. I'm seeing this from Nikki. Nikki tweeted out, Washington's proposal, permit clubs that may qualify for the playoffs to obtain scouting credentials for two consecutive games, weeks 17 and 18, played by a potential playoff opponent. And clubs hosting wildcard games must provide scouting credentials to all teams in the same conference who are in the playoffs. I didn't know that you couldn't get scouting credentials. But God, man, I wonder why you scouts need to be there with the ability that they have with all 22 and beyond. All right, we are done for the day. Back tomorrow, we will have our brackets filled out and ready to roll at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Chris Russell's next.